Thursday, June the 4th, at the White House, was another day of grand hotel, every room full, and swift succession of work and entertaining. For me, it began a little past 9. Lyndon had already left at 8 o'clock for a commencement speech at Glassboro, and while I drank my coffee, I read the headlines. Student protests flare in Europe, Belgrade, London, Rome. Marchers beleaguer Attorney General in the Justice Department. And Israeli planes hit Jordan, kill 35. What a time of travail. I was dressed and ready at 10:15 to go with Doug Cater and Liz to the Shoreham Hotel to the Booksellers Convention, where to Heald and to Build has a special booth with a great big handsome picture of the jacket, one of the best pictures I've seen of Lyndon. Several of the McGraw-Hill officials met me at the door. I'm very proud of this book, really, and the booth was done with dignity and flair. Ralph Ellison was there, a reserved, soft-spoken, dignified man. He's one of the 10 essayists, and his was one of the best. I thanked him for it, and he said, "I consider it understatement." And while he autographed my book, cameras flashed and people pushed up to get autographs. I did quite a few, but no James McGregor Burns. He was supposed to have met me there, so Doug said. I wondered what to read into his absence. Was he afraid to be seen with me, lest he be considered courting the Johnsons? I stopped briefly at the Steck stand and at the University of Texas Press. I was presented with several books, and by the time I emerged, had an armful and was saying, "All I need now is a free weekend and a big suitcase. I'm loaded with books." Back at the White House, I called Doris Wildenthal, Jesse's sister, to see if she could come to the dinner tonight, and Kern and his wife to the after-dinner entertainment. No, they're in too much of a strain, waiting for the results of the tests on the baby, which will be known this afternoon. And then, at 11:30, with Lyndon, out onto the South Grounds for the arrival ceremony for President and Mrs. Trejos of Costa Rica. It was a bright green and gold day, and felt like the very first day of summer. A delicious heady feeling that makes you want to play hooky, leave all your apartments and go off and walk the Appalachian Trail. I count them now with the feeling that each arrival ceremony may be the last. With summer coming on and the campaign, President Trejos emerges from the car, an ample, gentle-faced man, placid, liquid brown eyes, the big embrazo for Lyndon, his wife, very warm and smiling, speaking little English. We make our way to the stand, and the cannon booms forth, this time a perfect smoke ring that rises halfway up the monument. The flags snap briskly in the breeze. I lift myself an inch taller when they break into the Star-Spangled Banner. Mrs. Trejos and I talk about Washington's wonderful spring and her stop at Williamsburg, while our two husbands circle the lawn, reviewing the troops. I pick out in the crowd a good many of our house guests. This is an every room full night. The Bobbitts in the Queen's room, the Morsons in the Lincoln bedroom, Cecil Rubies and the William Allens, Bill Knowles and the John Ben Shepherds coming a little later, Susan Stevenson in Lucy's room. She'll be working this summer. And so will LaFay Davis, who is in the maid's room. And I had brought Gertrude and her three children, Hazel, Ethel, and Donna, for a week of sightseeing in Washington. Part of my continuing plan to share this house with those that are a part of our life in the time that I have left. When the speeches were over, we filed in the diplomatic reception room, lined up to meet the members of the Costa Rican party and our reception committee. The Trejoses had brought their two sons with them, Humberto and Juan Jose. And lo and behold, at the end of the line, there was Gertrude and her three daughters. I don't know whether this was sheer chance or at the special request of my husband, who is quite capable of arranging it. I went to Mr. Pears with my familiar Mexican straw bag loaded, a week's absence, and I'm in chains to my desk for several days, and spent my time busily under the dryer, reading my briefing on Costa Rica, signing mail, and reading memos of things I must decide. I was back home at 3 o'clock, with Lyndon still in the family dining room for his regular Tuesday luncheon, my tea guests already congregating in the yellow room. I changed quickly and went in to join them for what turned out to be the most pleasant hour of the day. There was Dr. Reddick, who has hardly changed since he taught me journalism at the University of Texas a quarter of a century ago, and Mrs. Edgar Tobin and Mr. Robert Tobin of San Antonio, who had been my hosts at the opera, Monte Carlo, at the opening of Hemisphere, He's interested in everything that's historical restorations or cultural in San Antonio. The Winton Blunts of Montgomery. He's president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and has himself just built a paper mill within sight of my land in Autauga County. They told me I would not recognize it now, but between Prattville and Montgomery, it's almost solidly built up. And out in the hills from Prattville, handsome homes are going up. And that land, which I remember for about $8 an acre, is now selling for $100. She goes to the same beauty parlor that Elaine does, and we soon establish that comfortable feeling of a shared background, and I promised to look them up whenever I came back after January the 20th to try to do something about my property. But John Rogers of Dallas, he's Ashton's cousin, turned out to be an extraordinarily handsome young couple. She is anxious to have a portrait done of Lyndon by her favorite artist and wants to give it to hang in the Texas Hall of Cultures at Hemisphere, a permanent building. I think we'll give it a try. And I was especially glad to have John Ben Shepherd's children, the John Ben Juniors. I'm shifting gears into the younger generation, at least for some quota of the people that we have around us. I do not want to move only in any one age group or regional or interest group. The Bobbitts came in a little late, both looking very handsome. They had tea and cookies and tea sandwiches and good conversation about Hemisphere and opera and the beautiful spring this year. And it was I who hated to turn them over to the guide and go back to my desk, so I gave them the little story about the yellow room and then took them back to our quarters, showed them our acquisitions of pictures, and then slipped into my room for about 2.5 hours of lying in bed but working hard, calling Brooke Astor. I very much want her to come to the dinner for the Shah, but she's been in the hospital for 9 days and cannot. And then going over the whole seating, it was necessary to change Lyndon's entire table and to rework mine. Barbara is excellent, but Bess is so superb, the household necessarily feels the absence of her steady hand. Greeted our additional house guests, Bill Knowles and the John Ben Shepherd Seniors. Checked with Marilyn on a schedule being laid out for Gertrude and her 3 children so that they can do the whole rounds using my car part of the time. I was in and out of Lyndon's room. He'd been up until 2 o'clock the night before and then up again at 7 to go to Glassboro, so I had hoped he would get some rest. At 7 o'clock, Mr. Perry came and gave me a handsome up hairdo. I put on my pink Stravopoulos with the little white flowers and had time for just a couple of pictures and to brief myself on the gifts for the Chief of State. Fort Lyndon and I, almost on time this evening, went downstairs to the North Portico to greet President and Mrs. Trejos. It was a beautiful vista standing there, the fountain cool and inviting at the end of the warm day, and around it the bright red geraniums edged with white. Across the lawn in Lafayette Park, the bright flag of red and white flowers. The city is lovely. Rifle butts came down smartly one by one, and the big black car rolled up, and out stepped the beaming pair, Mrs. Trejos in a silver lamé dress. I'm often the last one in the line of 4 as we stop for pictures, practically with my heels hanging off the edge of the top step, and I know sometime I shall come clattering down. We went to the yellow room. Their Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Lara, a handsome young ambassador, and Mrs. Ortuna, their sons, Juan Jose and Umberto, Saul Linowitz's, our ambassador, and his pretty wife, Mrs. Boonstra. Angie, still without Robin, who's in Spain. Secretary Rusk is still absent. We'd asked the Bob McNamara's to come up, and I practically flung myself into their arms. Their gift for us was an outstanding piece of sculpture called Still Wet, a little newborn calf. Distinctly modern sculpture, but very pleasant. The artist using only a few soft planes and curves and lines to make a perfect little animal in an impressionist sort of way. There were pictures at the foot of the stairs, and then we went in to hail to the chief and stood in line to greet our 140-odd guests. Not our most brilliant guest list, with the Rusk and the Humphreys absent. Only one member of the cabinet, the Freemans, and the Whites from the Supreme Court, and one member of the Senate, but one I had long been wanting to have, the Harry Byrds of Virginia. A sizable contingent from the House, headed by Carl Albert, and including Omar and Ruth Burleson, and the Roman Puchinskis. There were the Philippe Herreras and the Covey Olivers, of course, and Ed and Ann Clark. He's the new executive director of Inter-American Development Bank. And the Raymond Tellis greeted the president with a big umbrazo They'd been ambassador to Costa Rica for 6 years. From the press, there was Imelda Dixon, who speaks Spanish, good-looking young Richard Saltonstall's of Time Life, Helen Thomas, whom I introduced, the newspaper lady who goes everywhere with me, from the world of arts and entertainment, Rudolph Serkin, the pianist, who has performed so charmingly for us several times at the White House, and Mrs. Charlie Bird, without her husband, Jose Limon, whom I find very simpatico, the young Negro pianist, Andre Watts. From business, there was Jim Farley. Coca-Cola claims that it has relations with more countries than the United States government, Cyril Magnin, and numerous people representing the fruit and coffee and sugar industries. Among the latter, Irv Hoff, our old friend. Education, there was Dr. Robert Hutchins, former chancellor of the University of Chicago, although his presence did not delight my husband, who seems to have overlooked him when we first presented him the list. Congressman Albert turned out to be the star of my table. He lit out lickety-split, talking Spanish, said that when he was a scholar at Oxford, he had continued on to Spain and studied there for a year, law, I believe, and had learned Spanish well at that time. Our guests were as delighted as I was. The press was interested in Lewis Stokes, who's running for Congress. He's the brother of Carl Stokes, the mayor of Cleveland. And in the Ed Sullivans, that veteran of TV. One difference in this dinner, I heard that when a guest arrives, he really shows his entrance card. They put it under an x-ray machine, and it instantly becomes some color. I suppose this would make it very difficult to forge, because you wouldn't know what color was supposed to come out for each dinner. It was a genial but unremarkable evening. We talked about their country, 1.25 million, more nearly homogeneous population than nearly anybody, 95% white European background. The most interesting thing, 2 live volcanoes and some good beaches. The president's background had been all as a teacher until he'd entered politics about 3 years ago. When it was time for the toast, Lennon struck a light and humorous note that I think the company enjoyed. He said he understood that when President Kennedy had gone to Costa Rica, he had had an unusual welcome, a volcanic eruption. If that had happened to me, and he paused just right, I would have felt perfectly at home. And everybody roared. Later tonight, we may pick up some tremors from an eruption in California, he added. We had used our new china, and the guests at my table were very complimentary. Dorothy LeSueur and Mrs. Charles Bennett, the wife of the congressman, and dear Jane Freeman, whom I had put on the president's right. Even Bob McNamara. Bob said he was leaving the next day for Indonesia. Why? He had simply looked on the map to see what countries were most in need for some kind of help from the World Bank, and he was going to travel around and look at some of them. Indonesia was. He described to us the amount of inflation that had taken place there in the last several years, and it was so incredible it would take practically a fortune of money to buy a quart of milk, and I gave up trying to understand it. We'd passed our menu cards around, all of us, and our courtly guests had penned nice sentiments in Spanish. I had found myself all evening using my few Spanish phrases with wild abandon. They may have a good time laughing as they go home about them. And though the president spoke English a great deal in the evening, when he rose to deliver his toast, it was in Spanish. Most of it was an invitation to us to come to Costa Rica, hopefully while we're still in office, if not later. When the president finished reading his speech, he put it down and added a few sentences of very sincere, earnest friendship, so appealingly delivered that the guests gave him a standing ovation. We moved into the red room for coffee and liqueurs. I wondered how Costa Rican feels about Sanka, because frankly, I couldn't tell which I was serving. Arthur Drexler came over. I asked him about the exhibits, how they were progressing. He seemed more enthusiastic than he ever had. They're coming along fine. I think you will like them. And then into the entertainment, introduced with a few sentences by me. It was Patricia Brooks in a dress that was solid glitter, singing a bit of Mimi from La Boheme, and 3 more brief numbers. Most memorable, Glitter and Be Gay from Candide. Leonard Bernstein. I'd never heard of it, but it was delightful, and as much acting as singing, which added spice to the program. And it was brief, a bonus for my weary husband. Then we did pictures, and Angie whispered in our ear that additional gifts had arrived belatedly from the president, and he hoped we'd go back upstairs and look at them. We made our way through the crowd, slowly talking to left and right. And then, just as we reached upstairs, I could hear Linda Bird retreating down the hall with a little screech. I could just see her in curlers and her bathrobe. She escaped, and we went in to find a handsome saddle trimmed with silver and a silver baby cup and spoon, which will be nice for the next little baby. Patrick Linden is far too grown up. In the hall, we ran into our house guests ascending. I think the president will certainly remember them because this is the third time they had met. Back downstairs, the band was playing, and a few of the younger guests were dancing. Linden made no effort to start, which was a relief to me. And very soon, our guest Savannah made the movement toward the front door, and we were not reluctant to say good night, though they are as genial and pleasant a pair as we have had in all this busy year. I circled the room, visiting with Anne and Ed and the Tobins. Roman Paczynski said he wanted to make a bet with me that Linden would be drafted. He said, I think he did the right thing, but I think they'll just find that they can't do without him. His young daughter had been out talking to college groups when Linden had made his speech getting out on March 31st. She was the absolute prototype of what you hear about as the young McCarthy folks. Bright-faced, eager, youth of 68. I am more and more relieved every day that he's made his decision. And Roman's suggestion has absolutely no allure for me. I went upstairs at 12:10. Linden had gone ahead and climbed into bed and read myself to sleep with a large stack from the Read and File envelope. Mostly wonderful thank yous for the diplomatic reception, the Bourguiba dinner, various house guests. I wish Linden's fare was as palatable as mine. I usually save some of the best of them for him, and some of them I wish I had writing letters for me. It must have been past 1:00 when I went to sleep.